increase the resources for affordable housing in the district. I think it's important to keep the net amount in mind. I think we also have been proposing for now a couple of decades other policies that could be adopted by the city that don't require just cash in order to realize these objectives. And I think it's important to remember that the development agreements, the time of the greatest leverage with any given property owner or developer, is before the city agrees to spend the money on the infrastructure that all of them need in order to realize their projects. In other neighborhoods, if I'm a developer and I want to build an apartment and I need, you know, to do new curb cuts and sidewalks and street frontage, I need to pay for that. Here the city's doing that. So before we ink that deal, I think we should make sure we're getting the right quid pro quo from all parties that have an interest in seeing this move forward. And I hope it does move forward. I just want it to be done in the right way.
Charlie, if you want a blunt answer, there isn't a lot of confidence that if those are the numbers, that that's in fact what we'll see when the projects get done. That's why I think you're okay. Not seeing everybody in the audience stand up and go right on. You know, there's just not a lot of faith that these goals are going to be met.
Okay, I hear you. I appreciate that.
And,
thank you.
Yeah, and when you spend the money matters. You know, when this district started, there was $25 million identified for housing, and they thought that was enough, or that's how they came to those constrained goals. By spending it later and continuing to wait both for identifying and securing, taking options out on property, as well as developing, makes it go more and more. So we'll be able to spend the money, no problem, but unless we are smarter and more strategic about it, like right now, then we're not going to meet the goals. We're not going to get the units. And it's about housing people, not about spending the money. And there's other resources in the community that those resources can be leveraged with. And, you know, that's where it gets gnarly and people's eyes roll back.
Wait a second. Did you say gnarly?
I did.
That brings
Do I owe you a quarter?
That brings back a flood of memories.
Do I owe a quarter?
Huh? You owe me a quarter. Mayor, let me jump in with just what Charlie was saying. You know, we've had very deep, robust debates in this chamber in the last few months about police accountability, about investments in Northeast Portland. And a common feature is advocates come in and say, that's a good start, but we want you to do more. And that's what I hear you saying, but you're asking for more specificity. And that's the role of advocates. And in almost every area we're dealing, we're being pushed to do more and be more specific. So I want to take Will's four points. We have a proposal for 200 units at Parcel 3. You've challenged us to find a way to finance 270. So that seems to be clear. You have reminded us that as we continue to expand housing units in the district, that the denominator gets bigger, so the numerator has to get bigger. So it's the affordable housing goals are not static. They grow over time because we have to look at the income profile of the city and we have to constantly adjust based on the number of units that are built generally. So you've reminded us that our affordable housing goals that were set once upon a time assumed a certain number of overall units, and as the district gets more units, we have to add more affordable housing units to maintain the right proportion.
Well, if I may, it's not quite that, because when that deal was cut in 2003, the constrained funding said we're going to cut our goals back by 64% until we reach 3,000. Then we're going to go back to the matching the city income profile.
So that's a clear statement. But again, that I understand. You're saying that we need to that our current targets need to be readjusted as the district grows, and I understand that. You've challenged us to secure sites now because they're not going to get any cheaper. That certainly is true, which is why I believe that fundamental to the Zidell negotiations has to be a piece of dirt that's identified that can be built. Number four, you said that there actually has to be a piece of dirt in the Zidell negotiations, so I think that is stated. And then we've heard a lot about Block 33, and I think we should have some testimony on Block 33 because one of the astonishing things in here is that the investment we've made in the district is substantially above the actual amount we invested in Block 49. And that makes Block 49 on paper look like a much more expensive program because there was a lot of real estate transactions that occurred before the city put its money into what's now called Gray's Landing. So it becomes a very expensive project, but almost a third of that money actually had nothing to do with the project.
Yeah, and there'll be someone later that will break that out
and,
more specifically.
And that has been, there's a, I know that was a gnarly deal, but it didn't have to be that gnarly. So anyway, I appreciate the specificity, and I think you've put down the markers and the challenge, and I do think we have to be very clear, not just because we have to be clear about our intentions, but because every new dollar that's generated, there's competing priorities here. Commissioner Fritz is going to be advocating passionately for a greenway or a park. The mayor and commissioner, the mayor and others will be advocating for infrastructure, and that's the nature of what we do. So if we're not intentional, then we may not be in the first position or the second position from your point of view. So I appreciate that.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate
thank
you
for your time.
Thank you for your
appreciate
time.
Appreciate the detail.
You too. Thank you. Okay, now we'll call one more panel, and that's Andre Baugh, President of Planning and Sustainability Commission, Dave Unsworth from TriMet, and Lynn Michon from the South Portland Neighborhood. Thank you for waiting. Thanks very much for being here.
Oh, I'll go first. Andre Baugh, Planning Sustainability Chair, Commission Chair. The URAs that came before us were only two that we were able to look at. That's the Central East Side and North McAdam, because under the code, we only look at significant changes. So my comments and the letter really reference only those two. We looked at the URAs twice. It came before us, and we delayed it to get more specificity around housing. And it came back again, and reluctantly we passed it and sent it on to council. And I'm just going to go through many of the things. Our recommendations have been talked about already, so I'm going to just highlight the ones that we really felt needed to be pushed forward and really taken up by council from that standpoint. Housing, 30% of the units in this district, we feel, and we put this forward also in the west side that you have before you right now, 30% of the units being affordable units. That is key. This is a key component of the central city. And if you don't get the units here, it's going to put more pressure on the rest of the city to meet your overall housing goals for affordability. And so you need to think about that as you think about doing housing. The share of TIF funding allocated in North McAdam should be increased. The current policy is 30% of the TIF goes to housing and the remainder goes to infrastructure. We think you ought to rethink that position. And this is not a competition of parks, infrastructure, and housing, because we believe that a good diverse neighborhood should have parks. And so we think you ought to do parks and affordable housing. The real question is, what is the priority down there, and what is the, how do you spend that money and when? And so as you look at that, you already have in there about a minimum of 50%, but remember that 50% is a back-end proposal that we put forward for going to housing. And we think you ought to look at that earlier and every year through a budget process to say, if you're not spending the infrastructure money, could you spend it on housing? Could you spend it on parks? Through a budget process so that you're accountable every year to the housing question. Council should support the Housing Bureau's effort to secure funding for the operating subsidies needed for units at 0 to 30. We heard that's a tough issue, and that's a barrier to affordable housing, and we support getting more operating dollars. ZRZ, the Zidell development, we strongly support affordable housing in that development. And a question that we had and a discussion we had was, if this was an inclusionary zoning, which we support, we've testified for, we've said we're putting in the comp plan, we've done everything to try to get it for years in Portland, Zidell would pay or build affordable housing. However, in a TIF district, the city has to pay to do affordable housing, and not sure why that is.
Unless, of course, he chose just to do commercial buildings.
Unless he chose to do just commercial buildings. And lastly, we would like to strongly support the Lot 3 project, and between 200 and 400 units. We're not specific there. But that's really my comments. And we did not, we had a discussion, just to be clear, about the issue of parks or housing. And we are clear, we think you need to do both. And we think the funding needed to be earlier than later. Because it's not building North McAdam without the parks or without the housing just didn't seem fair at the end of the day.
But the proposal doesn't have the money for the parks.
It does not. You're correct. And it doesn't have the money, we think, for affordable housing either to reach the numbers. So that's the change in looking at that 30 to 70% allocation. You have to change that number, or you just don't have enough money when you look at the budget.
Thank you, Andre. Appreciate it. Lynn, why don't we let you go next since you volunteered for this?
Good afternoon. My name is Leonard Michon. I'm a vice president of the South Portland Neighborhood Association, as well as the land use committee member. And I am a resident of South Waterfront. I also just recently joined the PDC's Central City Advisory Committee, representing residents, not businesses. I'm here to advocate for transportation infrastructure improvements. Table 4 within the report accompanying Amendment 4 to the North McAdam Urban Renewal Area highlights 24 different transportation infrastructure issues, of which 7 are identified as complete, 7 partially complete, and 10 incomplete. There are actually 3 which residents of South Portland believe should have priority. First is the extension of Bond Street from Gibbs to north to the River Parkway. This is a key for development of Zidell Yards, as well as for access and further construction on Zidell's, the OHSU Snitzer property. Both Zidell and OHSU will certainly be economic supporters, and really a lot of funds coming from Zidell once development gets started. Second is the South Portal access into and out of South Waterfront. This is a traffic flow restrictor in the current configuration. What's needed at this point is an extension of Southwest Moody and Bond to Hamilton. This would involve taking the former Bin Springs property, which is now being used as a parking lot. PBOT at this point is looking at several options to access South Waterfront from McAdam, with the possible alignment of Lowell taking property that is actively in use. The third is the Willamette Greenway Trail from Ross Island Bridge to River Parkway, linking Tillicum Crossing to Tomacall Park. What I am seeking consideration for as representative of SPNA and a resident within the South Waterfront Community Association is installation of a temporary hardtop trail. Zidell's multi-year remediation of the riverbank has already created a dirt trail that makes that connection. I expect that Portland Parks has concerns, but I'm certain that Zidell is willing to work with the city in getting a temporary greenway built. This is not only important for the residents, but it is an incentive for workers and employers and everyone soon to be taking advantage of the Tillicum Crossing. What I would also like to say is, as a representative of the South Portland Neighborhood Association, we are also very supportive of affordable housing. So it's not that we're looking for transportation or affordable housing. We're looking for both. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for your help. Dave, welcome.
Mayor Hales, council members. Dave Unsworth. I am the director of project development at TriMet. And on September 12th this year, 2015, we'll be celebrating the Orange Line. So it's the connection that goes from Portland State. It has a station at Lincoln in what could be the expanded North McAdam ERA. Has a station down at Southwest Moody. The infrastructure we put in place is already there for the extension of Bond, and TriMet spend millions of dollars in investing in the Greenway Trail down in the South Waterfront as well. We cross the Tillicum Crossing. That's part of the $64 million we put in bicycle and ped improvements throughout the corridor. We have a station at OMSI and we have a station at Clinton. Those are in the east side urban renewal district. And clearly we continue down through Southeast Portland neighborhoods to Clackamas County, 7.3 miles. So excited to invite you to the first ride on May 15th. So we're moving along and things are happening and we'll open up on time and on budget. That's not really why I'm here today, though. What I'm here today is to really talk about why we're finishing the work that we've done. So as we look at the Clinton Street Station, through the Southeast Quadrant planning effort that's gone on, the community has come together and said they see a vision there for many different uses, and for those uses to be successful, there needs to be improved access, that's roadways, changes to that land use in there, and it's not just the zoning, but it's actually what the community has said they think they need. So for that standpoint, TriMet supports the expansion, the extension of the Central East Side Industrial URA, if you will. Similarly, when we go across the river and we look at the Lincoln Street Station, I know Portland State, through the Lincoln Station, the market, and strategic plan they've gone through, they have visions for what will occur there. We think that that inclusion of that station in that area in the North McAdam area is a smart investment. It builds on the investment that this region has already done. So urge you from that standpoint to support these ordinances.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for all your good work.
Yep.
It's pretty exciting. Questions for this panel? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so let's turn to the sign-up sheet for those other folks that are here who'd like to testify.
Okay. I show 17 people left on this list.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are John Ostar, Maxine Fitzpatrick, and Susan Emmons. Okay, thank you. And then let's go with Dan Valeri.
He's here.
How about Marianne Molden?
Okay. Susan, welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Susan Emmons. I'm the director of Northwest Pilot Project, and I'm here today to speak for people who can't be here, and that includes the low-income seniors calling us every day, desperately seeking housing, 20 calls every day, and we have nothing to offer them but waiting lists. We have to tell elderly people sleeping outside that there's a waiting list for our emergency shelters. I've been doing this work for 30 years. I chaired the Housing and Community Development Commission from 1992 to 1995, and we did a needs assessment every year, just as we are doing today. In 1995, we had a countywide shortage of 10,000 units for households at 30% of median income or less. Fast forward 20 years to 2015, and our shortage countywide is 23,245 units. We have a severe housing crisis, and the poorest of the poor are the ones in greatest jeopardy. And I think we all understand the need. So what are we going to do about it? Identifying Parcel 3 as a site for affordable housing is a terrific first step. We've been told there can be 400 units on the site, and we're looking at one building of 200 units. At Northwest Pilot Project, we think all 200 units should be for people at 30% of median income or less. We've been told there's concern about so many very low-income units in one building, and our response is we can give you a list of buildings with a concentration of people at this income level that work beautifully. And I'd love to take any of you on a tour, but I'll give one example. Rose Schnitzer Tower, Southwest 12th and Clay, 235 units, subsidized housing, all very low-income seniors and people with disabilities, preserved by the city as one of 12. Thank you, Commissioner Fish, and your city funding. Residents of the beautiful Mirabella have kind of adopted Northwest Pilot Project and done some amazing service projects for us. I was speaking to them in early December last year, and the subject came up about the lack of progress in their neighborhood to provide housing for very poor people, and they asked me why, and I told them truthfully that I think there are people who don't want more housing for poor people in their neighborhood. One resident got up in the audience and said that she and others were at the opening of Gray's Landing, that they think it's a beautiful building and would welcome more buildings in their neighborhood, that they know they are privileged and want to live in a mixed-income neighborhood. She wanted to be here today to testify, but she couldn't miss a medical appointment. But she was all lined up with me for January 29th. We had a few delays. And I'd like to close with the story of a woman who lives at Gray's Landing. She's 74. She's been poor all of her life. It's not because she's not smart. She's as smart as can be. It's not because she hasn't worked hard all her life, raised her family, was widowed earlier. She's a real survivor, but she would tell you, I'm poor because the jobs I had never paid much money. She was at our annual holiday luncheon for seniors last December, and she told me that when she stood on the balcony of her studio apartment watching the Christmas ships coming down the river, she cried because she knew she had the same view as people with considerable wealth, and it meant so much to her that the powers that be felt she had value and that she deserved to be in a beautiful setting. And I know every one of us in this room loves Portland, so the question is, can we make it the city we dream of, the beautiful, equitable, progressive, fair place for every citizen? I urge you not to adopt the amendment as is until we have answered the questions posed by so many people testifying today. Where are the sites? What are the affordability levels? When will they be built? And if not now, when? And if not in North McAdam, where? And I would also like to say from your previous questions about the money and all the competing priorities you have as city council members, and I wouldn't want your job for all the money in the world. I think you have really tough jobs, but I think we always find the money for the things we really want to do. Aerial tram, state-of-the-art transit system, extending the streetcar to South Waterfront. We find the money for what we want to do, and we always build housing for poor people last. 30 years in the business, that's what I see.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for all you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's next? Go ahead.
Dan Valliere with REACH Community Development, and as you know, REACH manages the one affordable housing project in South Waterfront, Gray's Landing, and thank you, Susan, for that story. And I'll just offer one other example of how affordable housing gives back to the community. One resident at Gray's Landing is also a board member at REACH, volunteer, so there's volunteer service right there that he gives to REACH, helping govern the organization. He had a stroke and has a disability as a result of that, but he teaches yoga, gentle yoga, so it's yoga for anybody. You don't need to be able to sit on the floor or do any stretches over your head, and he volunteers all around town almost every day of the week, and so he's giving back to the community in countless ways to other people, at no cost. I mean, he's an incredible person. So that's just one example of many of people who give back to. So it's not just about helping it to how it gives back. Developing housing on Parcel 3, yes, great step forward. Increasing the set-aside also is a great step forward. These are all things that have just come about in the past few months, and that's great. I also would point out that the proposal includes at least 62 units for 30% and below, and people with income 30% of median and below. That's a good place to at least start. I think we do need to strive more. I would echo what Susan said, that we can do more. There are countless buildings where there are way more than 62 people, very low income. So we can. There are ways to do that. The resources need to be figured out, but it's been done many times. I would also encourage even looking at the number 200. Again, there are bigger projects than that. So if it, to the degree that could be a floor, you know, leave the room for the city and others to try to exceed that. I also provided a handout, just some more information. It's a breakdown of the reported total North McAdam housing expenditures, and this was talked about a little bit earlier, so it just has some more breakdown. Oregon Opportunity Network prepared this handout. I gave it to a clerk. And one lesson to glean from this is that there's room to be much more efficient with the funds. As an example, you already heard about the gnarly deal of Gray's Landing, and as an example, it was first envisioned in 2003. The land and the project stalled midstream. The city ended up issuing an RFP in 2010. Reach was chosen in 2011, and many of the high cost aspects were already locked in, as Commissioner Fish pointed out. For example, PDC paid $5 million for the land in 2006. So if it had been acquired in 2003, you know, it would have been much less than that. So there are many dynamics to be factored in to why it was so expensive. And that doesn't have to be repeated here. But the conclusion is it needs aggressive action. And to use the monies efficiently, we need to be as aggressive as we can be today. And that will lay the groundwork for a wise use of funds going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us here. My name is Mary Ann Malden. I am a lifelong resident of Northeast Portland. I was born and raised on 19th and Stanton, and we married in 71, bought a home at 4335 Northeast 40th, and have lived there for 43 years. Our home's paid for. And as I reflect on our lives, I just can't help but think of those in our community who do not have the means and the opportunities that existed for us. I'm thinking of a particular family in our community that attends our church in Northeast Portland. They're a family of four, comprising of a mother, a father, teenage son, and daughter. They previously resided in a two-bedroom apartment in the Cully neighborhood. The teens shared a bedroom and the parents the other. The family agreed that the children sharing a bedroom was not a tenable living arrangement during their adolescent years and needed a home that could accommodate the growing needs of the family. Over a two-year period, they were able to save and borrow from relatives the $8,000 required for a down payment on a three-bedroom trailer at the Arbor Park Trailer Park in Cully neighborhood. They owe a sum of $50,000 on it in addition to a monthly fee charged for leasing the space. Both the parents work full-time at minimum wage jobs, and they've used all their resources, so are really hurting for this dump. My husband and I also deliver emergency food through St. Vincent de Paul in that area as well, and you know, I just went, I just need to come and be a voice for them. You know, we've been so lucky. And so as you're making decisions on the North McAdam renewal area that will create an opportunity for low-income families such as the ones I've referred to above, I voted for all of you, each and every one of you, believing that you would honor the commitment to promoting low-income housing for those in need. And I just asked you to act thoughtfully and justly in making your decision. You know, we all have just this one life to live, and we got to do the best we can, all of us, so... Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Susan, I just had a quick question for you, if I could, because you're here at a time we're talking about two issues that are near and dear to your heart. One is no net loss, and one is obviously expenditures within urban renewal. So in the connection with the West Quad plan, I've asked for some updated information on no net loss because I want to better understand how we're doing. Now, you publish an annual survey, but it occurs to me that we ought to be thinking about no net loss and this urban renewal district, because if there are older adults that are displaced in the West End, for example, because of some market force, what better place to live than South Waterfront within walking distance of great health care and having access to all the other benefits? Do you know offhand if we have any significant at-risk buildings in the West End right now?
It seems to me from looking at our map that anything that's privately owned is at risk. Anything that isn't in the hands of a nonprofit is at risk. And it may just be, I mean, when we count our inventory, the buildings still exist, but the rents have got so high that they're not available to our folks. And we've seen so much displacement from that.
So with all the likely development pressure, particularly in the West End, where there's still some older buildings and very low-income people, we I think inevitably we're going to see displacement, just natural, and we're going to have to also figure out how that relates to the no-net loss policy. And I think we have to keep our eye on South Waterfront as a place where perhaps we can do some replacement.
And I think that, you know, it may sound very negative to you what those of us who are housing advocates are coming forward, but I think it would be a lot worse if we hadn't done what we'd done, the investment. I mean, we've done some wonderful projects, so it doesn't deny that we've done good things as a city, but we could do so much more. We have a lot of talent and we have a lot of knowledge. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks all three of you very much. Okay, next ones, please.
Are Sam Goldbreth, Jean DeMaster, and John Miller? And they'll be followed by Tasha Harmon, Diane Lynn, and Kathy Orton.
Jean, would you like to go first?
My name is Jean DeMaster. I'm the director of Human Solutions, which shelters or houses approximately 350 homeless families every single night. This is about 1,100 homeless people, about 600 homeless kids, and about 500 homeless parents. I also serve on the Portland Housing Advisory Commission, although I'm certainly not speaking for the commission today. But I think that when the Portland Housing Advisory Commission meets next week and we talk about these issues, I'd like to offer that the Portland Housing Advisory Commission do the monitoring on the progress of how many affordable units we have produced once we agree on a goal. According to an analysis completed by the Portland Housing Bureau, in Multnomah County, there's at least 23,000 affordable housing units that are in deficit, which would mean that these are units that we are needed for the lowest income renters but are not available. For us, this deficit means that although homeless families have vouchers to be able to get out of the shelter or get out of the situation of being homeless, they're not able to find apartments or apartment owners that will rent to them. As a result, they are stuck in the shelter or they're doubled up with family and friends, sometimes in unsafe situations. I'd like to ask you to imagine yourself as the parent in a homeless family and you have several homeless children with you, and you finally get yourself out of the emergency shelter by having a voucher that you can take to a landlord and it'll pay for 5 months' worth of rent, and you go to apartment after apartment after apartment and no one will rent to you. And then someone asks you, how many units should they build in North McAdams, 62 or 200 or 400? If you were that homeless parent, you wouldn't say 62, I don't think. For every 100 extremely low-income renters, there's only 21 affordable rental units for them to rent. For Human Solutions, we have 700 units. Our vacancy rate is 1%. Which means we have 7 vacant units at any time, and they're only vacant for as long as it takes to turn over the unit and the next family moves in. As you know, being homeless is harmful both short-term and long-term to parents as well as to children. Children have a very hard time keeping up in school if they're homeless. Parents can't keep jobs if they're homeless. But this lack of affordable housing and the 23,000 deficit in affordable housing units is what keeps these families being homeless. Part of the solution, of course, is to build more affordable housing. I would just like to ask you in summary to think about whether or not we have enough affordable housing for all of our citizens, whether or not we can purchase land now to make it more cost effective, and if we can identify strategies to build housing for very low income people and write that into the plan so that we're certain that it would happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm John Miller. I'm executive director of Oregon Opportunity Network. Oregon ON is a statewide association that advocates for affordable housing groups. In Portland, we have 19 nonprofits that we serve, but so we advocate on their behalf, but really we advocate for the 23,000 families that Gene just mentioned that are heavily rent burdened right now. So I wanted to first, thank Mayor. Your staff has been great to work with over the past several months. We've also been working with many of the advocates that have already spoken today. And what I'm going to do today is really sort of recap and put a fine point on some of the asks that we've had. And I think, you mentioned we're as advocates, we ask for more, and that's right. And, that really is our role. And I think with, the screaming need out there, we would be remiss if we weren't doing that. So, and we'll keep doing it until the problem is solved. Right now, there's 23,000 families that are rent burdened in Portland. And until we get that solved, we'll continue with this message. So just to recap our ask, what needs to be added to the plan for North McAdam URA to really make it be a complete community, which is one of the initiatives that I know that the City Council is looking at, is making complete communities throughout the city. Well, this is a great opportunity in North McAdam URA to make it happen. Some of the things that we're looking for. So on Parcel 3, commit to reach the constrained goal of 270 units. 200 is a great start, but really 270 would at least get us to where we need to be with the original plan of the URA. Also, we need to act now to secure additional sites. And we don't have to tie up the money right now. We can just put down options to purchase later. But we need to get those sites in the pipeline now before the area's been redeveloped and the land cost goes through the roof. We should turn to OHSU, PSU, ZRZ, and others. And they should help by making land available. Given that the expanded area is already or will soon be at 4,000 units, to match the citywide income profile, we're going to need at least another 300 units at below 60% MFI. And so I know recently we had an issue in northeast Portland where there was an affordable housing imbalance, and Mayor Hales, you made a bold move and dedicated $20 million to meet that need. We see that this is a good opportunity for perhaps another bold move such as that to try to meet these goals. Also, in the Central East Side URA, there should be language to ensure that there's a firm commitment to securing affordable housing in the Clinton Triangle or on other sites. So there are many developers and owners here that are ready to jump in. We know that there's not enough money, and right now we're trying to solve it with URA funds. The big picture is we do need a very large sustainable revenue source, which we'll be talking to you about more in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome, stranger.
Commissioner Hales, Commissioner. My name is Sam Galbraith.
He got a promotion.
But he was here. I'm sorry. Commissioner.
Mayor Hales.
It's a flashback for both of us.
Yeah. Excuse me. My name is Sam Galbraith. For almost 20 years, I worked for the Portland Development Commission. The majority of that time was spent in charge of their housing programs. And during that time, we accomplished some seminal things, I think. One of the things I'm most proud of, because of its lasting value, was a 1979 document, Vera Katz, I think, was on the advisory committee, to establish downtown housing policies and programs that live to this day in terms of ongoing policies, such as the income profile that's in the North McAdam project. Based on those programs and the recommended policies, thousands of units have been retained, upgraded, and built in the following 20 years. I also want to thank you for pursuing the overall URA changes. I mean, Mayor Hales, this is long overdue. I think it's an excellent move, and I commend it.
and also for accepting the ongoing goal for the North Macadam in terms of the housing goal, for the Parcel 3 objectives, maybe with some modifications, like Will White suggested, and for earmarking $47 million to meet it. But why am I here? I'm here, I've been out of the maelstrom of public policy and public development for quite a while, but in rapid succession at the beginning of the year, I read a couple of quotes in one of our daily newspapers, which made me incredulous. I knew it must be an error. Both people are in the room. I won't name them, but one said that we can proceed with development of North Macadam without a development agreement with Zidel. And another prominent person said, you know, Zidel can go and pull permits at the development office without any development agreement. Well, maybe so, but not likely without the $27 million-plus in infrastructure that the plan is scheduled to carry out. You don't give away your leverage. The goal of an urban renewal project is secure public benefit for the city as a whole. And certainly a heterogeneous neighborhood, a neighborhood in which over 50% of the workers make 60% or less of the median income, is a worthy public goal. So what I ask is a continued goal of matching the city income profile that was established in the plan in 2003, after the 3,000 initial units are developed, so we're looking forward. No amendment to the development agreement without key properties like the Zidel, Block 33 and Block 3, and development agreements to reflect the ratios consistent with the overall income mix in the goals for the project. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Galbraith, just to clarify, you don't think we should do the URA amendment until we have the ZRZ agreement?
That's my position. I know that there's some feeling otherwise, and it is true that we've initiated urban renewal areas and not had, of course, development agreements. But I think the development agreements have to be, I think we need to hold off on making incentivized infrastructure investments that benefit primarily a major landholder until we have a development agreement. So I think we have leverage. We don't have legal authority, but I think we have prevailing attitude and certainly precedent to do that.
Thank you.
Sam, just to follow up on that, OHSU has made a pretty compelling case for making the investment law moody. And so if we held up indefinitely for Mr. Zidel to come to the table, we might be holding that hostage. The other concern I have is that we have the money now to invest in Parcel 3. And again, if we wait a year, let's say it takes a year to conclude a negotiation or more, I mean, we can't compel that negotiation. Are we prepared to hold that hostage, in effect, to a development agreement that may not happen, where we have the money to move forward on a substantial down payment affordable housing in Parcel 3?
I didn't realize there was a tie between the Dizelle development agreement and Parcel 3.
No, the point is, without the amendment that we're proposing here that expands the geography and creates and puts more TIF in North Macadam, we don't have the resources to do Parcel 3. So I get that leverage is the key word here, and gnarly. Leverage cuts both ways, and different people are going to look. But one of the things I'm concerned about is holding an affordable housing development in Parcel 3 hostage to a requirement that we have a development agreement with Zidel that might not happen if Mr. Zidel chooses not to consummate a deal.
And I understand the dilemma, and I think there's a way to have both.
I want to know more about that. Thank you.
Your ideas for on how the time could run forwards and backwards at the same time would be most welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, next three, please.
Next three are Tasha Harmon, Diane Lynn, Kathy Orton. They'll be followed by Elena Kay, Eric Leonard, and Barry Jo Stahl.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor Hales, Commission, you've heard a lot of details in the last couple of hours and several specific requests, and I'm not going to rehash them. that's been well covered. I'm here to look at the big picture with you again. Portland is becoming a city that doesn't work for a large percentage of the people who live and work here. Even before the vacancy rate fell to 2%, an estimated 54% of all renters in Multnomah County were cost burdened, were housing cost burdened, paying more than 30% of their income for housing. That's only going to get worse. We're on our way to San Francisco if we do not make different choices. The new draft comprehensive plan says that most of the new housing in Portland is going to be built in the central city. But the vast majority of the housing need is for people in low and moderate incomes. And if this process in North McAdam is any example to us of how it's going to go, that need is not going to get met. Without strategies for preserving a real diversity of housing in our older neighborhoods, you won't even be able to build sufficient housing, affordable housing in the central city to offset those losses, never mind increase the supply. We can't do what needs to be done for this city around the affordable housing strategy simply by investing public dollars. That's going to have to be a necessary part of the strategy. It cannot be all of it. We need to shape the incentives and requirements, the environment in which development happens, to level the playing field between the people who want to create a diverse housing stock and the people who simply want to make as much money as possible from their land and development. We need a commitment to policies and tools that will shape the city's housing supply to match the incomes of the people who live here. Advocates gave you a list of those tools 20 years ago. They included mandatory inclusionary zoning, linkage fees, a land speculation tax, land banking, and permanent affordability requirements. Not one of those tools, save something sort of like permanent affordability requirements for subsidized housing, have been implemented. And here we are. The city has invested millions and millions of dollars in urban renewal districts without any of those tools in play. And here we are. The city is failing to create a framework that will lead to a housing supply that meets the needs of its citizens. The best time to create that framework was 20 years ago. The next best time is now. If you fail to make this shift, you're not only creating hardships for innumerable people, you are also undermining a bunch of the other goals that you hold dear. You cannot succeed in limiting carbon emissions, increasing high school graduation rates, eliminating food deserts, creating livable, complete communities without making the creation of a supply of housing that actually matches the income profiles of the city a major priority. We're here to ask you to acknowledge those connections and not limit yourself to what's easy, to what feels possible, to what you have enough money for. We're asking you to be stewards of the future, to champion diversity and equity and sustainability and build a city that works for all of us.
Thank you very much. And welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council members. My name is Diane Lynn. I'm Executive Director of Proud Ground, Portland's community land trust that creates permanently affordable home ownership opportunities for medium low income people, as you all know. We also maintain about $18 million of land assets for the community through the land banking process. Tasha reminds me, I was chair when I was at Multnomah County as a county elected official, and today I don't miss that job in watching all of you guys grapple with these issues. I did have a chance to chair the Affordable Housing, Regional Affordable Housing Committee. That a lot of those tools were discussed at thoroughly again after that 20-year-ago conversation. And we did help Multnomah County work very closely with the City of Portland on a 10-year plan to end homelessness. I'm really here just to say that I'm wanting to support this group of housing advocates who bring this amazing institutional memory to these efforts to try to create real housing opportunities for people. A lot's happened in all these years, but I think we could all agree that we haven't come even close to meeting the progress we know is necessary to meet the needs, and it has now become imperative. I'd also like to thank all of you and specifically Commissioner Saltzman for supporting House Bill 2364, which is the effort to reverse the mandatory ban on inclusionary zoning, our one hope of just imagine what it would have been like if we had had that in place over all these years. Since 1999, we've lost that that tool. We need to bring it back to the table, along with all of the specifics you've heard today from the advocates about what can be done, we need to bring that tool back to the table also to give Portland, you know, a fighting chance to make this progress possible. I'm also here to say, look, let's all work together to offer support, leadership, creative ways with the cross-sector communication that we, in collaboration, we can do. The land trust could even be a part of helping establish a land banking or getting options on the land that's available in North McAdam today. That's just an idea. We can work together. We've got the brain power. We've got the heart. The people that are here today are here because we really care about this city, as you all know, very well know, and we're here to help figure out how we can do better at this particular in this particular effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I am Kathy Orton. I represent Brooklyn Action Corps, and I guess I'm a change of pace with all the housing discussion. Presently, only the Clinton Triangle is proposed to be part of the new URA. And the reason it's to be added is because it adds to development of the Portland-Milwaukee light rail line. However, this ignores the vacant and marginal uses along 17th Avenue, as well as the south side of Powell. If the goal is to encourage development along the new Orange Line, then the entire segment should be incorporated. To make this point, I have included several tables. Table 1 shows the south side of Powell businesses, of which there are 17 of assorted sizes, mix of old and new businesses, and a variety of site owners. Table 2 shows 17th Avenue Brooklyn businesses, not going beyond the boundary of Holgate. There are 17 businesses there and an equal number of unused lots or TriMet parking areas. If you'll also notice Table 3 that shows the current users of the Clinton Triangle, there are only 6 small businesses in existence there now, as well as the Fire Bureau. The majority of lots on that section are owned either by the City of Portland or by Stacy and Whitbeck, who are the contractors for the Orange Line. The Fire Bureau is considering moving, and we're not even talking about the Brooklyn industrial area from 26th to 18th Holgate to Powell. So transportation is a huge issue at Milwaukee and Powell, as we all know. There's also huge issues with the Brooklyn industrial area, Union Pacific, Holgate. Will all be impacted when the Orange Line actually begins running. So in conclusion, I would say either add the south side of Powell businesses and down along the 17th Orange Line additional stations as part of the URA, or leave the Clinton Triangle out altogether.
If we were to do that, how far south would you think we should go?
I would go as far south as Holgate and even consider the Brooklyn industrial area.
Down to McLaughlin?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all. Next three.
The next three are Eleni Kiagieras, I believe is the last name, Eric Leonard, and Barry Joe Stull. And they'll be followed by Susan Pierce, Jeannie Gaelic, and Hiram Asmuth. Okay. Eric, thank you. Then why don't we go with Susan Pierce.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Hales and Commissioners Fritz and Fish, the only two left. My name is Eleni Kahayaris. I chair the Lincoln High School Long-Term Development Committee, and we would like to acknowledge and express support of the proposed URA amendment impacting the Lincoln High School site. We agree that these amendments may have a positive impact on other areas of our city, but would like to note the loss of support to the site of Lincoln High School. Lincoln High School campus plays a vital civic role in the life of urban Portland. As part of the education URA, Lincoln High School would have benefited from the urban renewal that it is in dire need of. Schools, and importantly, urban schools, are economic drivers for our city, one that we could better utilize and support. When people consider the city of Portland for their future home, they look to the schools, the public schools. Lincoln High School is the only public school in downtown Portland, and it gets looked at, toured, judged, and often the city of Portland and our great public school get bypassed for the suburbs and or private school, not because Lincoln lacks programming or success, but because of the quality of its facilities. Having been officially named along with Benson and Madison High Schools for the 2016 bond measure, Lincoln has a strong possibility of being rebuilt in the near future. The bond has the potential to ignite economic and civic growth in the city of Portland by creating a hub of education, civic engagement, and economic mobility in the heart of our city. Master planning for the proposed project will begin this year. We seek open dialogue and opportunity to keep the City Council of Portland and the PDC apprised of our progress and to solicit input and support as our community prepares to go before the voters. In addition, the amendment as stated by the PDC has three main goals, one of which is to support Portland State University. Lincoln and PSU, while no longer may be bound together by the urban renewal boundary, are nonetheless in development of programmatic and potential building partnerships. Projects regarding the sharing of facilities and spaces such as classrooms, labs, athletics, and parks. The loss of URA dollars will have an impact on future partnerships. Also, please note that the I-405 physically divides the two schools today. With this new educational partnership and the sheer size of the two schools continuing to grow, the importance of the land over the I-405 and its connections will become more and more vital. We encourage the city to direct PDC and applicable bureaus to begin working with regulatory agencies to clear the way for bridging this divide by making it feasible to undertake such a project as soon as the opportunity presents itself. Finally, with the loss of the Education URA, we are uncertain how offsite and infrastructure will be developed. We seek support and understanding that the city, PDC, and PPS work to establish other secure sources of funds to cover extensive offsite and infrastructure improvements related to the development of the Lincoln High School site, as these are extraordinary relative to the other bond-funded projects PPS has planned. And because Lincoln High School is a unique urban site on public transit lines with shared public spaces which benefit the entire city. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on this. I'm Susan Pierce. I am chair of the Hosford Abernathy Neighborhood Association, or HAN, as you'll hear it referred to. The HAN board has not been able to, it neither supports nor opposes this project. The amendment was first brought to our attention in September. We had brief periods of time in October and November to discuss it amongst everything else that's going on in hand. Things are pretty busy right now, and we haven't been able to discuss it since. The whole concept of urban renewal, TIF financing, it's a little complex for some of our board members. We do, generally speaking, support the CEIC position on this sort of issue, and I could sort of attach everything that Debbie Kitchen had to say as an amendment or a beginning to what I have to say here. There are some aspects or considerations, however, that we on which we the board agree. The Clinton Triangle is the area immediately adjacent to the Clinton Station, a stop along the soon-to-be-open Portland-Milwaukee light rail line. HAN board members and residents, along with our neighbors in the Brooklyn neighborhood, have been considering what we want to see as station area development for a number of years. It's a developmental challenge in part because it's currently not accessible, as we've heard earlier today. If the UR funds are to be contributed toward reconfiguring Southeast Powell and Milwaukee Boulevard, this could address some of that accessibility of that property, along with the freight transit that's so important to the central, the CEIC. However, if this is done, the already the residents along 11th and 12th Avenues, which is in addition to being the Central East Industrial District, is a residential district that actually predates the industrial district of which it's now a part. These are all old homes, or for the most part are. Those residents are really concerned about the traffic and the speed of traffic up and down, especially 12th Avenue. And so if there is enhanced accessibility, then we would be adamant that changes in infrastructure at Southeast Milwaukee or that there be mitigation. And we also would support the CEIC concerns about speed bumps. However, we'd be interested in stoplights. The Clinton Triangle could absorb the low-income housing required as a part of the URA spending, thus decreasing the concerns of the CEIC about putting it in the midst of industrial properties. That would We see that as a good thing. It's right there in a transit center with a new Orange Line. And we have been, is that the end of my?
Yes, please try to wrap up, Susan. Thank you.
Pardon?
Please try to wrap up, Susan. Yes, thank you.
So we'd be very happy to see more low-income housing because we've lost a lot to big developers. The Crescent Park